Hello, and welcome to a very special edition of the Crossbox Podcast. The genesis of this special edition being that your hosts are lazy and did not want to prepare a full episode for this month. So, as the strains of the theme song finish, we'll tell you about the rules for tonight. What are we doing? It's a little challenge. I've had in the back of my mind an idea for an aircraft carriers at war game for some time, like a little war game sort of thing of the... That's sort of like the middleweight complexity. I think that, yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, sounds good.
And one of the things that's very important for this is being able to capture in a nice, easy point-by system the various traits and characteristics of aircraft carriers the world over. So for this episode, we're going to be sitting back, enjoying the Knob Creek Reserve, and talking about aircraft carriers and how to represent their traits and characteristics in a point-by system.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be technical and dense.
Technical, dense. Probably kind of boring, but no more so than the regular episode of the Crossbox Podcast.
I will be more focused on a regular episode.
That's true.
We'll be bouncing around a bunch.
One topic, ladies and gentlemen. That's the what we're doing tonight.
We're going to pretend like we're going to confine ourselves to one topic. I might try to sneak something else in.
But we are talking primarily about aircraft carriers.
Yep.
Anyway, so one of the aims of this system is to keep it simple, to distill the essence of American, Japanese, and British Second World War carriers. Yeah. British.
Junk. So allow me to rephrase. Of good, decent, and crap World War II carriers into a point-by system.
Yes, into a point-by system, ideally representing the each specific carrier class with as few traits as possible. Without resorting to, American carrier as a trait and Japanese carrier as a trait.
Right.
And, junk.
Yeah, as a trait.
Yeah. Now, anyway, there is a point that came up in our preliminary discussion, such as it was like a week or two ago, across the offices at work, how best to represent doctrine. And that is a good one.
There's a number of things that I think have to be captured in doctrine. But the point you're bringing up, let's start somewhere.
Yeah.
And we might be getting ahead of ourselves, but I was specifically referring to aircraft capacity.
Right. I think that is a factor of hull size and of other design choices, which I think can be adequately presented as part of the carrier. But I would go even further and say that things like national pilot skill and damage control efficiency might also be represented by traits on the carriers, in the sense that it gives you the ability to put together a multinational task force, as it were. I like the idea of not having to design a separate nation.
Right.
Yeah.
I think pilot skill as a point by goes kind of without saying. Ditto damage control goes without saying is something you'd spend more points in or not.
Even things like Japanese scouting procedures at Midway, say.
Right. Because that's what's one doctrinal question, right? Because let's fill in the viewers. So the British didn't scout, as far as I can tell, because they're useless and suck at carrier fighting. The Japanese Navy believed that a carrier air wing was for fighting, and for fighting only, JSON, and so relied on cruisers equipped with float planes to do their scouting. The U.S. Navy, which not coincidentally, had a significantly larger air wing than everyone else, and I'll get to some questions in a moment, but they had a larger air wing than everybody else. They figured a carrier should be self-sufficient, and they used the superlative SBD Dauntless as a scout in addition to a dive bomber.
Yes. So anyway, again, I think that and basically everything is best captured as things on the carrier. So let's zoom out a little bit and imagine how the setup might go for a game of this notional game.
Right.
You start by picking a point value for each side.
Right.
You then design carriers.
Or pick from a list, book. Yeah.
I think we'll probably want to come up with American carriers and Japanese carriers, and maybe the British if we're feeling generous.
Yeah.
So as a pre-selected thing, so we can also do a midway scenario, and you can see if you can do better than what's his name, Nagumo.
That wouldn't be too hard.
Yeah.
He did pretty atrociously.
I think the trick would be to add some fun randomness, so you can't just the American carriers are over there to the west or the east,
right?
We'll just go attack them.
Though that's always we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes, we are. Anyway,
because midway simulations always have this problem.
So you pick your uh, design and or pick your carriers, then buy escorts with things, whether, you know, you're left for points. Figure the escorts are basically quantified exclusively on their anti-air prowess, because you have a...
Yes, well, I'll finish. You'll finish your point. Then I'll ask my question.
On their anti-air prowess, because as far as a simulation of carriers at war go, that's really all that's important.
Right. The one thing I might add here is I might add a stipulation that you have to have some scouting somewhere. And so I might have an option for your cruisers to, you know, that some cruisers have a scouting option.
I figured you'd have like a scout cruiser, good anti-air, or scout cruiser, poor anti-air.
Right.
Or just, you know, cruiser anti-air.
Yeah. Or you
cruiser,
know,
useless.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then the other thing is you could also have, you know, scouts in your air wing.
Right. Or you could just elect to use parts of your air wing as scouting.
Yeah, that might be easier.
I think that's probably how it'll end up being. You'll get like a, you know, a list of all the aircraft available to your task force, and you can task them as you desire.
Fighter, good.
Yes.
Mediocre.
So we can allow the, you know, the Japanese player, if he so desires, to like send up Kates as scouts, which is very un-Japanese, but
he could.
I think the counterfactuals are some of the, like, the fun part of war games.
Right. Right. But the plausible counterfactuals.
Anyway. Yes.
Yeah. And actually it was the U.S. Navy deck park that I was kind of curious about, because you said he had an idea about it.
Well, that was the same as just representing the, like, doctrinal choices like that as carrier trains.
Deck park plus X points.
Yeah. Well, deck park plus, you know, N percent aircraft capacity.
Right. For some point cost. Yeah. That's probably fair. That you can take it as a
super busy deck park plus N times 1.5.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting. I think the other one might be, you know, kind of balancing early, late war, but that's just simple, like, more points.
Point cost, yeah.
Yeah.
Might I borrow your cup holder's, it's a legal pad and a pen, and I figure it may be handy to write down some of this conversation as we go along.
What? The recording isn't good enough?
Well, I mean, you've listened to our podcasts.
We're pretty disjointed. Yeah, so doctrine things like, deck park, damage control quality.
Yeah.
And I think really you can just abstract it away as various degrees of damage control quality, giving you a bonus on the dice roll. But there are dice, right?
Yeah, well, they're behind the scenes anyway. So the way that I'm thinking of handling most traits is, rather than giving you a sliding scale, you have the kind of the default configuration. Then you have a trait for good and a trait for bad.
Okay.
And I feel like that mostly covers everything. There's not like a great deal of not a great deal of sliding scalitude, I guess.
That's fair. That's probably a nice simplification.
And I think maybe just for early war, late war, you might have like a slider that makes everything slightly more expensive, everything slightly less expensive.
Right. A shift.
Yeah.
That's probably plausible. And then, you know, higher bonuses across the board for average, good, and poor.
Or or take a page from that perennial Crossbox favorite Star Sectors book.
Yes.
And change the price of traits based on.
Yeah. Yeah. That might work too.
Let's see, deck park, damage control, firefighting. I guess I repeat myself there.
Put it all in damage control.
Yeah. That's probably reasonable, too.
Right,
yeah.
And then maybe, you know, you have multiple checks or something, but I think simpler is better there. Much as we're people who would love to obsess over, you know, I got my +3 to damage control because I flooded the gas lines with inert gas. Yeah. That's entirely too much for most people.
Although it's not really, it's not a detail that really matters, I guess, in the scheme of things.
No.
Well, so figure behind the scenes with all these traits, you have a bunch of aircraft carrier traits.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got like obvious things like your speed and your range, and to some degree, like probably your aircraft handling ability, based on elevator size and everything,
and number of elevators.
Number of elevators too, yeah. And then you have your kind of it starts with an I. Inferred qualities. You have your inferred qualities.
Inferred, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, I got there eventually. Like your firefighting ability, right. Your, anti-aircraft gunnery.
Right.
Your, like, your crew deck handling aircraft rearming skill. the amount of grumbling there is when the Admiral tells you to rearm with land attack bombs, then goes back to to armor-piercing bombs.
Do you want to like clarify for the audience what the difference is between a land attack bomb and an anti-ship bomb?
One of them goes off when it hits. One of them tries to get inside something before it goes off.
That's right. Yeah. It's a different fuse and a different case material. Yeah. Also, less high explosives than the AP bombs.
Yes. Now, there are some interesting doctrinal questions that I feel are left out of the point by system. That's only because they're broader than that, even. Like, you can say, adjust the proportion of aircraft in your air wing.
Right.
And the Japanese really like torpedo bombers, and torpedo bombers are great against battleships, but iffy against, a nice, flak-heavy.
Right. Also, the carriers can generally maneuver quite well.
Being, either built on battlecruiser hulls or built to go fast to launch aircraft.
Functionally a battlecruiser hull, even if, in all but name.
Fun fact, completely unrelated, but I discovered this doing some reading about Big Kuz, Russia's carrier. And I had always been a little bit concerned about the sea flanker's maximum takeoff weight. As far as the ski jump goes. But it turns out that as long as you've got a 25 knot lead of wind, which only requires that Big Kuz's engines be working, which I grant you is not a given.
That is not very much given. Ladies, let me interject here that whenever Big Kuz puts to sea, he, because it's the Russians' trait to be weird and refer to their ships in the masculine, he is accompanied by an ocean-going tug to tow him back to port when his engines fail. Not if, ladies and gentlemen, but when.
So yes, provided the engines are working at the moment in time at which you want to launch, and you can maneuver so that you're facing into the wind, you can actually sling a sea flanker at its maximum takeoff weight.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Again, if we suppose the engines are working.
You can do, still 30-some tons if there's zero relative wind. If the tug can get going into the wind just a little bit.
Right, yeah. Well, you can probably get, some guys at their oars to,
What if you just, attached a couple of tugs, semi-permanently to the sides and used those as the engines?
Well, there you go. Yeah. That might work.
Okay, I suppose we're getting a little bit
that's still a carrier. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I suppose they're the same topic, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so there are some doctrinal things. Mm-hmm. Let's identify those characteristics, what make your American and Japanese carriers special.
All right. Besides doctrine.
Yes. Your construction things.
Yes. Well, you have Yankee carriers have radar.
That's a good one, actually.
The Nips don't.
Yeah.
Right? That's a nice point by thing. Yeah. The American carriers have put more effort into being able to direct their fighters from the carrier.
Right.
Fighter direction. Though you could probably glop that in with radar because you can't really have...
Well, I think that's actually a reasonable thing to separate. Given that even without radar, the Japanese might have done better if they'd had... More direction to enforce pilot discipline in staying in your cap sector, which is very important when you're relying on your pilots and their eyes to see the bombers before they get to you.
Right. Again, especially considering the American predilection for, dive bombing attacks, which are superlative against big, dumb flat tops.
I'm going to put in also aircraft carried radios.
Yes.
Because the Japanese were... Well, the Zeros in particular were hampered by terrible radios in Midway. Right. So even if they did have better facilities in the island... And better doctrine for directing fighters.
Yeah,
it was difficult to actually get a hold of Zeros in the air. So.
Right. Yeah, and Zero pilots tend to communicate amongst themselves hand signals, which is, very Baron Manfred von Richthofen.
Yeah,
but
perhaps you could come up with some sort of gigantic hand to mount on top of the island to make the signals.
Well, the carrier island. They used a lot of flags, though. The Japanese didn't like the radios all that much. So radio quality is a good one.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's room for a separate kind of doctrinal thing about radio silence or not? Because the Japanese at Midway were pretty heavy into the we shouldn't be talking unless we've got something really important to say. We'll just wait to get back.
I don't think so. I think that's too... Well, I think one, that's a pretty heavy layer of abstraction for the naval... dabbler as opposed to enthusiast. Second, I think this is much more a tactical war game, so we can assume that the fleets are close enough that they could find each other should they be so willing.
Okay.
So I would leave that out for now, or perhaps pencil that in somewhere, but I think that might be too much.
Maybe as an in-game mechanic, like you would tell your pilots how much you want to hear from them. Of course, it did kind of come back to bite the Japanese a little bit. Their float plans, radio contact report, and then say nothing.
Because I feel like that's the price you pay. So yeah, that might be a slider, but we'll have to, again, let's deal with that later. So other things, those crappy carriers traded aircraft hangar space for armor, like actual flight deck armor.
Oh yes, the Brits. I'll make a little heading for them, I guess. Armored flight decks.
Right, and that's a penalty to your hangar space.
Yes.
I think that's also probably a penalty to quality of fighter as well. You can embark
because they're low. Of size, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, size is fighter quality.
Yeah.
I know how much you love Heinemann's Hot Rod, but for the rest of us, and over here on planet Earth.
I do have a tendency to be fond of the small fighters, don't I?
Yeah.
The Yak-9.
Yeah, the A-4, the Gripen. Well, probably because you never had to cram yourself into an A-4 cockpit.
I have not yet. I have not yet had the opportunity.
They're a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Anyway, so armored flight decks are no. The American carriers were a lot more open than the Japanese carriers.
Yes, another good one.
Which is kind of a weird place because are we charging more for less?
I think we are, actually, because, the enclosed flight decks is clearly a penalty to your aircraft handling because
you can't, it's just everyone dies of carbon monoxide poisoning.
So you've got that
game
problem.
Over.
You've also got the firefighting issue where the Americans were known to just kind of shove the planes over the side out the giant open hangar deck thing.
There's a lot of things you can do when you can just push burning stuff out the side. You can also have small ships come alongside to assist by squirting water and stuff on the...
Which, for avgas fires is a question of utility, but it's better than nothing.
Well,
which,
would you rather just abandon ship Nagumo?
I'm going to put down a little thing for heavy / light aircraft of each category.
Yeah.
The Dauntlesses were, I suppose, the Japanese had larger, large torpedo bombers.
Say. Right. I think that's a function of, torpedoes are heavy.
Well, yes. But even more so than the poor old Devastator.
The Devastator is... Well, actually, it's interesting because is there a category for very crap? Because, the Devastator... So clearly the Kate is a good torpedo bomber, right?
Yeah.
And in other categories, I can kind of fit things out in my head, right? The Wildcat and the Zero are good fighters, perhaps different, not quite contemporary, but good fighters, and the Hellcat and the Zero are good fighters, and the Wildcat is a standard quality fighter. Not bad, but not really good. Maybe the Brewster Buffalo is crap. But here's the problem I have with torpedo bombers, right? Let's limit ourselves to early in the war.
Yeah.
The Kate is good.
Mm-hmm.
The Avenger is more of a late war, but that's also good. Yeah. I think we can say they're both good bombers. The Devastator is crap.
Mm-hmm.
And the Swordfish is what? Super crap?
Well, see, I've got here a thingy.
Ancient penalty?
Heavy versus light and outmoded versus new model. But there might be room for a...
Outmoded, old might be. Yeah. Might adequately represent Swordfish.
Outmoded, old, new.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, because the Swordfish is quite outmoded. But I think would you represent... Well, I think we should be careful with that. I might just go old, new.
Yep.
Well,
how do you capture the difference between, say, the Devastator and the Kate?
The Kate is good. The Devastator is probably poor.
All right.
So that's why I would. I mean, because there's.
So we'll just make old then a modifier on the thing. So old. you could have a torpedo bomber that was good back in his day and is now very out of
and,
date.
I mean, I'm kind of...
Which I guess it's kind of the Swordfish, almost. It was a good torpedo bomber in the 1920s.
Yes, exactly. I just needed an intensifier for, to represent the difference between a Devastator and a Swordfish. But again, I want to keep it simple because otherwise in our heads we'll be thinking the Devastator. Well, is the Devastator an old good or is it old standard or is it a new crap?
So here, let's do a little bit of a little design exercise here.
Yeah.
So we have three dimensions on which we can rate aircraft.
Yes.
We have good, bad,
Yep.
We have heavy, light, or large, small, as you prefer.
Right.
And we have old, or the implicit new.
Yeah, and I like implicit new, personally, yeah. because it's yeah. something you might assume.
Yeah, it's the recent thing. So let's do the F4.
The F4, oh god, you see, I'm such a Vietnam-era guy. The F4F Wildcat, ladies and gentlemen.
That's the one, yeah.
I would call that implicit new heavy standard. And here in my terminology, I've got crap or bad, depending on how you want to call that. I like crap myself.
Poor standard good.
Right,
with
yeah.
With the implicit standard.
Yeah, yeah. And again, implicit standard, implicit new.
So we've got the F4F is a heavy.
Right, and that's heavy because the F4F is survivable.
Yeah, the zero is clearly light and good.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, I think for heavy, light is mostly a function of carrying capacity and durability.
Yeah.
For the F4F, it doesn't really, carrying capacity doesn't really come up.
Yeah.
Well, it does. I take that back.
It is, but occasionally used as like a light bomber.
Well, yes. Yeah. And also, let's think of it this way. We can abstract some carrying capacity in terms of gun capacity.
Hmm.
Right? I mean, I know that's not, if we get technical, that's not how the weight works, but... You know, it actually works quite nicely for our abstraction layer that if the F4F is heavy, it gets a bonus to durability, which is correct, and carrying capacity. But the only thing it carries are guns, which means it shoots more, which is, standard American thing.
I think we need a long range alone thing, too. So you have either got like your standard carrier range of, 200 or 300 nautical miles, or your right. Japanese range of, from the home islands.
All right, yeah, fair enough. So zero, so we'll call it like good, light, long range.
Yeah.
Yeah, because range is also something that you can add, abstract separately from.
Let's do something a little bit more similar.
Okay.
We'll do the Dauntless and the Val.
All right. The Dauntless, so I would call the Dauntless heavy.
Yeah, I think that's...
Well, because...
With the option for that 1,000-pound bomb.
Yes, yeah. Exactly, heavy.
I think
heavy.
Probably leave it there.
Good
or poor?
I would call it good. I would call the Dauntless a good.
I suppose that's probably it's true. It's
yeah, I mean
a good dive bomber. For
what dive bomber killed more ships?
All right, the Val.
Old good.
Long.
I don't think the Val had particularly.
That's true. Yeah, that was the trouble they had with it actually.
Or yeah. So I don't think it did. I mean. The Dauntless, I would have to look at the numbers, might actually be long for it because it also has the secondary scout role.
Right.
But that's something to look up. So maybe pencil in long and question mark. We'd have to like compare some numbers. But
well, this is just like kind of spitballing to make sure that we can actually represent things adequately. And we'll do the other one, the Devastator Kate.
Sure.
Devastator, I think, is poor.
Poor, yes.
Yeah. That's really its only defining characteristic. It's just pretty
poor.
Bad.
I mean, carrying capacity is standard for its class.
I would call the Kate heavy and long, at least.
Heavy, long. Yeah. I don't think the Kate was a particularly good torpedo bomber. I don't think it was a particularly bad one. I think Kate is a good exemplar standard torpedo bomber.
Yeah. All right. So there's a... So that clearly...
Yeah.
...is functional.
Yep.
So that's a good first test. I should maybe flip the page over and see if we can do the same thing with a carrier or two.
All right.
So, I guess speed is also a carrier point buy sort of thing, isn't it?
Yes.
All right.
Well, yes, but the floor is going to have to start at like 25 knots.
Well, yeah. Oh, Kaga.
We'll put a gimpy characteristic down for old Kaga. Limps along like some,
Yeah.
Well, let me three-legged tortoise.
Do you mind if I use two pages?
Oh, please, please.
I suppose there's a legal path. That's kind of the idea.
Yes. You're supposed to use all the pages you like.
All right. So, we've got...
It's $5 for the second page.
Just like a lawyer.
Yeah.
So we've got our characteristics here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Deck park, yes, no.
And then size. Let's just do a simple size. Small, medium, large. Small, standard, large, and then maybe very large.
For?
Size of the ship.
Right. That's a good idea, actually.
And honestly, I think the best thing would be size of the ship, and that's going to include hangar.
Yes, me too.
And the other thing I might add is a very large late war only, because there is the midways, and the midways are ginormous.
I'm going to expand that initialism to late war.
Yeah.
I wrote it down as SM, MD, LG, HT, and LW, HT, which
late war.
Calls to mind Luftwaffe, too.
Yeah, it really does, right? Well, I mean, if you think about it, the Midway class carrier, she could embark the entire Luftwaffe at that point in the war.
Well, it... Zing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the other fun part is that, like, a... just like a mind-bogglingly huge carrier is kind of what you'd expect out of like about 1944 yeah. Germany as far as unrealistic plans go.
Yeah, it would. There's a couple other things we need to talk about. Anti-aircraft gun quality.
Yeah, that's a good one too. So.
Wait. Before you put pen to paper, let's think for a second.
I'm gonna go on the ones we've already.
All right. Well, so yeah. Sure. Then we'll forget about the others.
Damn con.
Yep.
So we've got a
radar.
Radar.
Fighter direction.
Fighter direction. Fighter.
Yep.
Aircraft radios.
Yeah. We're going to just call it radios and implicit aircraft. Because it's, good. You know, the carrier and her air wing. Radios.
Enclosed versus open hangar.
Yeah. And then armored decks. Armored flight decks.
Yeah. Were there any instances of a... The Japanese strength deck was still the hangar deck, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. The Japanese.
Well, the higher top hangar deck.
And you might force armored must be with closed.
Well, yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable because you're making
like an enforced
that's your
connection. Yeah. You know, if you pick armored, it's going to force you to take closed.
Put errors between there.
Yeah.
All right. So that's all the ones I think we went through
so far.
Yes.
So far, and let's leave it because let's not worry too much about speed and range. And
well, yeah,
just hammer this out.
Well, like it's. I mean, I'm going to put this down anyway.
All right.
Fast, slow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think range matters. It's a tactical war game.
Correct.
Yeah. So carrier range doesn't make a difference.
No. And I was about to ask about sorties, but that can be approximated with size.
Yeah.
Or it's tactical, so it's assumed you have enough for the battle.
The battle you're going to be in.
Never mind the rest.
Yeah. Unless you want to stick around, you know, after you've already been beaten or, you know.
Yeah.
Which is, as we've established, well, as Midway established, is also a bad idea.
Yes. When the battle's been decided, it's good to husband your ships for another day.
I think that's...
Oh. I almost said husband your wives. That'd be kind of an odd one. Mormon, play Mormon Hold'em on the high seas.
Pilots, good.
I think there's something the Japanese would really like there.
Yes.
Let's see. An implicit standard with the pilots as well?
I think pilots, good, bad is important enough to...
force one or the other?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Well, like I'm implicit standard, actually. Yeah. Like, okay. I misunderstood you.
Is there an implicit standard there? All right. Fair enough. All right, so let's do this.
Do you want to put down... Well, we'll leave this as the list for now, and we'll start doing some carriers and add things we need to do them.
Right, but let's just do our carriers proof of concept. It would be kind of a bother to go back.
So, Kaga.
All right, and again, Kaga's an early war carrier. If you did, like, Enterprise, we'd have to pick early late war.
Yeah.
But Kaga...
Built on a battleship hull.
Yeah, so she's big.
Yes.
She's a big girl, big boned.
Large.
Yeah.
Slow, obviously.
Oh, she is. Three-legged tortoise.
Yeah. So I feel like you've got a... Like an interesting kind of thing there with the fast standards slow. You've got like slow, which is slow enough to disrupt air operations in some cases.
Yeah.
You've got standard, which is just like your average carrier speed. And you've got fast, which doesn't really have anything to do with your air operation so much, but does give you like evasion stuff. Evasion. Okay. Obviously no radar.
Nope, no radar.
Do I make fighter direction like good bad or just a yes no?
I do good bad.
Right.
I mean, because I think like you know, there's some amount of fighter direction kind of implicitly.
Yeah, bad fighter direction. Enclosed hangars, as the Japanese preferred for some reason.
Yeah, lost to history. Hey, audience, if you speak Japanese, know why the Japanese were bonkers and preferred enclosed hangars, write to us.
I'm gonna go with good pilots.
Yes.
Too. So I think we will have to add. Like an anti-air thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, so here's my question, though, right? How deep do we want to go? Because the anti-aircraft... So let's think about this for a second, right? And then we'll talk about too much. Anti-air. Do you want to split it into heavy guns and light guns? I don't think so either. Well, because the only time, right... I can never think of a time when the quality would be separate.
Yeah.
The Japanese had mediocre... heavy and mediocre light guns. Until the end of the war. Well, no, mediocre all the way. The U.S. Navy had mediocre, and then eventually had superlative.
Yeah.
But by the time they got the good, heavy with the VT-fused 5-inch shells.
You got like your fancy Bofors guns.
Right, the 40mm quad here. Bofors.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's, I think that's reasonable. So we'll go with AA, good, bad. And we'll include in that, like, say, director control and everything.
Right, so. Yeah, just group it all in there. Right, you know, their local director control. Right.
AA, bad for Kaga.
Yeah. Yeah, Kaga was not been good.
Fairly across the board for the Japanese.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't. I mean, they had those freaking 25mm Hotchkiss guns. What the hell is that?
All right, so there's Kaga, I think.
Yeah.
Now let's consider the Americans, perhaps.
All right.
Yorktown.
Yorktown.
Yeah.
So, presuming you mean CV-5, yeah?
Yes, the early war Yorktown.
Not CV-10?
Yeah. Yes.
All right, so CV-5 Yorktown is I think she's a mid-sized gal.
Is she?
30,000-some tons? Well, maybe.
Well, they had big air wings.
Though. Yeah, they had really big air wings.
That may be something we should put in separately, like as a modifier. Because the Americans did pack a lot of airplanes.
Right. Well, the deck park.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Deck park.
Well, it wasn't exclusively deck park, though, even without the deck park.
Oh, yeah. No, they packed them in like, do you want to pack fighters?
Which you could have like damage control ramifications too.
So, right. Yeah, exactly. Pack fighters. Damage control might have to go up to very good by the end of the war, but or late war good, I guess.
As you move that slider, your dice rolls get better.
So. Right, progressively. So Yorktown, I'm going to call her a medium carrier again because she's clearly smaller than the Lex or Kaga.
Yeah.
The Essexes were bigger.
Yeah.
Mid war. So let's call her. I think she's a medium. Oh,
that's
ship.
Fair. Yeah.
Medium. Deck park.
I don't write that one down.
Part and it's like a YN.
Yeah. So did they? Were they in the deck park habit?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh yes. Yeah. There's all kinds of great like between the wars pictures of like Lady Lex or Yorktown with just the parked rows of biplanes, you know, four abreast or whatever.
Medium size deck park, mm-hmm. packed hangars.
Oh, packed to the gills.
Standard speed, I think. Mm-hmm. Not especially fast.
No. Certainly shouldn't get dodge bonuses, unlike say Lex.
Radar.
Radar.
Date, at least.
Yeah. Well, we call it radar.
Yeah.
Radar. Yeah.
Open hangers.
Yep.
Good fighter direction.
Yes. Good fighter direction. That was like a U.S. Navy thing throughout the war. We're going to use these radios.
Yeah. Ooh, that's something that I'd forgotten previously. Good inter-carrier coordination.
Yes.
Which I think, again, goes on carriers and carriers with good, but that share like good inter-carrier coordination.
Okay. I would
make it like an on-off sort of thing. No.
Yeah. No. Well, I would be careful about that. I would make it like a separate, like fleet-wide option.
Well, see, I don't know if I want to do that. Like, that'd be the only one so far.
Yes, but like the problem I have, like I think you. Well, I mean, I guess you'd have to do it so that it forces you to pick them all that way. Yeah. Would you?
We'll consider it this way. Say Shokaku and Zuikaku had made it to Midway.
Mm-hmm.
Those were both fairly green carriers at the time.
Right.
Do you think they would have been as good at the... Well, how do they do at... What's it called? At the down south.
When Coral
they,
Sea?
At the Coral Sea when they took the hit. Were they like launching coordinated strikes then?
No.
They were not.
No, they were not.
And they were operating as part of the same like task force.
Right, yeah. Like there was clearly a...
So I think you could reasonably have say
fair enough.
Like yeah you
if
know,
you wanted or
carrier division Shokaku and carrier division Kaga
right carrier division Kaga you know, the, what would they call it get, like the yeah. midwives or something the Japanese had some yeah. weird term for it
it's very Japanese so yeah. you could reasonably assume that your carrier division with Kaga and Akagi would launch right. a coordinated strike and Shokaku and Zuikaku
were not as good they were not as practiced in
so I think that's probably that. like a dice roll sort of thing
yeah
like you may get it off even if you don't have the trait. But mm-hmm. you're much more likely to get a good coordinated strike if you
right, because they did for Pearl. They didn't really do well as Coral Sea.
Right.
So, you know, carry division short bus.
Yeah, so that's I think, a reasonable way of,
yeah.
of
yeah,
putting,
I think so.
Putting things
together. Yeah, because you could, you know, have...
Coordinated strikes. So I'll put that up on Kaga.
Kaga, yes. Yorktown, no.
Yes.
The Yorktown is radios. Radios were definitely there. They were good at fighter direction. Coordination, especially early in the war, wasn't a big thing.
Radios, bad.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So there's Yorktown, I think.
Are we missing anything? Oh, AA quality.
Yes. Were they
standard?
I think they were standard.
Yeah, hey, Yorktown is standard. By Yorktown sank before we got the 5-inch 38s with the VT fuse or the Bofors.
So we've got, for Yorktown, medium size deck park, packed in hangars, radar, open hangars, good fighter direction, good radios, and probably good damage control, too.
No.
You don't think?
The beginning of the war, I don't think nobody has good damage control. The U.S. Navy was just less bad at it.
All right.
I mean, you see, they learned lessons, but, you know, we lost Lexington stupidly.
How could we have forgotten bad damage control on the Japanese
front? Yeah, I know, right? Just drink sake, the fire will go out.
I think that about captures it.
Yeah.
So, do you want to try a late war carrier for fun?
All right.
Let's do Essex.
Oh, all right. Love the Essexes.
Okay, so that's a... Is that a large or a huge carrier?
Yet? Large.
Large.
Right. Large. Well, mostly because I have differentiated from the midways, which are big, large, huge.
Yeah, so like, put that in. Midway.
Yeah.
Essex.
Right. And I might be splitting hairs in Essex, Yorktown, but you know what? I'm going to do it. Internet, if you have a problem with it.
Well, no, I think there's a clear distinction between, say, like, the Essex Kaga size carrier, then like your fast light carrier, which is obviously a small carrier,
right?
And then your medium carrier, like
Yorktown's treaty constricted,
like Yorktown or what's it called, the ones based off of Hiryu, late war ones, whatever they were called, the late war Japanese carriers that nobody cared about because they weren't, you know, because
they sank,
yeah,
they rolled over, I was gonna say Taiho, and I'm like, wait, no, that's not it,
wasn't it?
No, wasn't Taiho the one with the...
Well, Taiho's the one of the big ones.
Yeah, Taiho's their last big one.
Right, that class of small ones, basically like on the Hiryu, Soryu pattern.
Yeah,
Then so like the Hiryu, Soryu, like they're obviously not like Essex or Akaga size, but they're obviously not light carriers either. So I think we can get away. I'll defend you on that one.
All right, good. Yeah. Good. The first.
Right. I know, right?
So yeah, we've got... Large, deck park, stuff to the gills.
Speed? Normal.
Normal.
Yeah.
Essex is normal.
Deck... Park, packed, hangers. Just leave out all the vowels. I can read it.
Open hangers.
Yeah, open. Open H. Radar, obviously.
Yep.
Are we up to good damage control by that?
Oh, yeah. We're up to good damage control. They know what they're doing.
Good. I mean, we got so many carriers bombed by that anyway.
Yeah, eventually you got like Darwinism going. You're watching out. No, I take that back because the Japanese Navy never learned from their Darwinism.
Well, like they'll die.
Yeah, they couldn't make any new carriers to try new ideas on.
Yeah, so we've got a large deck park, packed hangars, open hangars, radar, good damage control, good radios.
Good fighter direction.
Good fitter.
Yeah. Good AA, good AAA.
Good Archie.
Yep. Damn World War
I think by then the Americans had pretty much like gotten the coordinated strikes thing together too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you get a good Sunday punch off one of those gals and there wasn't much left.
And then, like the couple next door too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So they
didn't have that problem where the carrier task force was like one carrier and then it's supporting things. They had worked out like if we launch them all at the same time, they can form up and go fly together.
Yep. Yeah, nothing you really love against a good Sunday punch. So yeah.
Anything else? Let's see. Fighter direction, good, bad, pack them in. Yeah, that's all of them. Now let's have a really good time and let's see. And you're like formidable.
Shinano.
Oh, Shinano.
Let's do formidable because Shinano is like a what the fuck were they thinking carrier.
All right, so formidable.
Formidable.
Medium?
Yeah, mid-size.
Armored.
Armored flight deck.
Enclosed. Do you want like a modifier for small air wing too, or do we just want to like
the armored flight deck? Armored flight deck is gonna hit you hard.
Armored probably is also going to like keep you away from heavy aircraft too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no heavies. Yeah, much to their chagrin because they're trying to like fly Spitfires in the Pacific.
Yeah. Let's see, and flight decks. Note taking, frantic pen scratching.
Yeah, it's the best kind.
All right, so there's that. They did have radar, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. It had radar. Congratulations.
Fighter direction average.
Crap.
Was it bad? I don't know.
It's the British, dude. Yeah.
I mean, they did pretty well during the Battle of Britain.
Yeah, but that was land. They didn't have fire direction. I mean, are you kidding? They don't know what fire direction is. Remember, the British concept here is we're going to build an unsinkable motherfucking Titanic of an aircraft carrier. And like, because they didn't have good fight. Like, did they have good fighters? No.
Do you know anything about the formidable speed?
No. I'd imagine it was mediocre.
No, oh, leave it at mediocre then.
Yeah.
Average pilots.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have very good AA, did they?
No. Bad AA.
Not fact in coordinated or
no
deck park.
No,
obviously not.
No.
Well, I mean, if the you got your carrier is survivable, right? So just put the planes on top and it's fine. Nope,
but then they'd burn.
Well, yeah, you just
no. But that was the British idea: was you'd turtle.
Yeah.
And you pack and you'd wait in the hangar and you'd wait out like the Stukas, and then you'd I don't know, sortie against question mark. But the German Navy wasn't really a thing, so it wasn't a problem for them.
Yeah, I mean. British carrier air did okay against the Kriegsmarine.
Yeah, when it could fight the Kriegsmarine proper. I mean, the Luftwaffe kind of cleaned its clock. And you had weird things like Courageous, you know, picking a fight with Scharnhorst in like a phone booth. How old was that?
And, like, they were moderately useful in the Mediterranean.
Too. Yeah.
Although I will grant you that one of their main uses in the Mediterranean was ferrying aircraft to Malta.
Being a magnet for Stuka bombs instead of, you know, transports you could actually sink.
Yeah. So they were functional as bomb sinks, just not as like aircraft carriers.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I think we should, you know, we mock the armored flight deck pretty heavily, and deservingly so. But I will give the Brits credit, it was damn hard to do anything with a dive bomber against an armored flight deck.
Which, again, that is very unusual for carriers. Unfortunately, after the Stuka kind of got phased out, the Germans were much bigger on torpedo bombers than they were on dive bombers.
So. Right. Right. Yeah. Well, because they kind of got away from dive bombers, like, across the board.
So there's, like, an interesting thing that maybe, like, you take those carriers and then you take, like, excellent escorts as far as anti-air goes. And then,
yeah. I mean, I personally...
It probably still wouldn't work, but that's why we're doing the war game.
Well, exactly. Well, yeah, but, like, you know, the... hey, kids, which is better at shooting down fighters? Your own fighters or flak guns?
Yeah.
Pro tip. Your own fighters.
Even good AA is not all that good.
No, it just means you hit like one out of every 300 instead of one every, you know, 10,000 or something.
All right, let's do Shinano.
Yeah, we might have to like add more things because of how like goofy armored the fat thing was.
So this is obviously a late war huge character.
Yeah, this is late war huge. Big McLarge huge.
Late war huge.
Yep.
Give
armored flight deck. All of the armor.
Yeah. torpedo bulge?
Badly made. Well, no, you wouldn't call it there because Shinano had a really terrible one.
Oh, yeah, so I'll just leave it out there.
Right? I mean, Archer Fish fired a regular spread and just rolled over. I think that basically... What else can we say about Shinano? Slow.
Yeah. On that big battleship hull. Obviously, enclosed hangar.
Yeah. Goes the armored. But yeah, no.
I think that the Japanese had at that point gotten away from, at least on Shinano, bad AA by sheer volume of it.
Remember, you're taking... No. Bad AA still. Because, I mean, you have a flight deck where you'd put guns.
On the guns, yeah.
So you be careful. Don't confuse Shinano with, say, Yamato.
Yeah.
Like, Yamato, you might make a case that Big Yam, with 150 of those freaking little 25mm useless pop guns, sort of kind of adds up. I mean, I would argue against you, but, you know.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it.
Oh, look, Shinano, easiest carrier to make ever.
Yeah, it's like, no, none of the good things.
Yeah.
Probably still bad fighter direction since
the Japanese. Yes, it's the Japanese. It's just...
I guess, did it mount a radar? I guess they probably were, no?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd have to, like, pull one of my references. I don't think it did. I don't think the Japanese ever really had quality radar.
So that's kind of funny. I mean, like, your giant, enormous Japanese fleet carrier is basically only distinctive for being giant and enormous.
Well, you know, exactly, because they're not really doing, like, a tonnage buy where, you know, you'd really get killed with Shinano.
Yeah. No, it's just, like, if you want something to truck a lot of fighters along, or a lot of strike aircraft along, because the fighters aren't going to be much good except as escorts.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating. That could be a fun, like, another fun, like, factual thing.
Yeah.
Like, you pack your Shinano with as many strike aircraft as you can, and just bring along, like, four light carriers as your, escorts and cap.
Yeah. Might work.
Yeah. No, I think this is
promising.
Yeah, turning out well, because it's providing that sort of, like, that tactical conundrum sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
We're starting to see that, like, shake out. We're also avoiding a lot of things that would, you know, otherwise bog us down into arguments over incremental increments, inconsequential increments.
So I think in terms of traits, we have for fighters, mm-hmm. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, that's good.
And here we have, let's see, 5, 10. Oh, we've come in at under 20 traits to capture the entire Pacific War.
I think it's solid.
Yeah. I don't know that there's much we could trim.
No. I'm not sure we'd want to. Yeah, I think we want to have, like, some amount of...
I think this is accurately fits things, yeah.
Right, and it might be the kind of thing where the... I don't know. You might... Well, I don't know how we'll think balance, but I suppose it's one of the wonderful curses of war games that if we made it accurate, it wouldn't be balanced.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing of point buy. You didn't bring equal fleets to Midway.
So. No. And or Leyte Gulf, for that matter.
Yeah. That's a less fun
scenario. I'm going to buy 20 carriers, all of them Essexes. Right? Yeah. Oh, wait, and then I'm going to buy, like, the escorts with the good AA, and I'm going to buy, like, all of those, too. Escorts, I think, like, just straight up good, standard, bad AA. The only characteristic that matters.
Scouts, no scouts.
Yep, that one too. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I think submarines can probably be left. I don't recall any
brown shoe navy, dude.
Yeah, I also don't recall any instances where, like, in the actual course of a carrier battle.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, all of those would be, like, you want to talk about Archer Fish taking Shinano down, or 15 taking out Yorktown. Those are all...
And then, well, what's her name at Midway? Was it, like, around and was causing trouble but wasn't actually, like, affecting flight operations?
Yeah.
I think that about does it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's solid. I like that.
That shouldn't be all
right. I mean, the numbers would be, you know...
Well, the numbers are the hard part. Listen, so we're coming up on our hour now, it turns out.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh, so we are.
Yeah. So let's do this. Let's one final thing.
All right.
Let's look at, you know, one or two carrier battles and evaluate the fleets on their points.
Okay.
So obviously the elephant in the room, Midway.
All right.
So, you know, I have a hard time, like, calling the Japanese force all that much superior to the American one.
Correct.
I think. So that's a roughly equal sort of situation.
Right. Because remember, kids, the Japanese have four flat tops, the American three, but the American ones are packed with the gills of planes. So the end result actually works out to be approximately similar numbers of aircraft.
Yeah.
Plus, the American player would have, you know, presuming we're doing this accurately, you also have all the planes at Midway.
Yeah.
Which is quite a lot. and Midway is a bomb sponge.
Heavens. That's also a thing to put on the list.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's like, I mean, all you're talking about with islands is, you know, how many planes you're putting on the island.
Yeah.
And actually, really, I think the islands are more of a map context thing. All right? Because, and then, like, we would program, you know.
Or make the random generator.
Right, or make the random generator do it. But that would do fighter direction, radar, fighter quality, fighter numbers, AA quality.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's a separate thing.
And the British, say, for instance, have that dichotomy where their land-based fighter direction is quite good, actually. But
right, exactly, yeah. You know, if you're fighting near Britain or Malta, you know, you actually get quality GCI as well. But I suppose that's a later term, isn't it? But whatever.
Yeah, it's close enough. So Midway, we'll say roughly equal.
Yeah, right? That's a roughly fair, straight-up match, give or take.
Coral Sea.
That might favor the Japanese. If you're Yorktown, Lexington.
Yeah, and then you've got...
Shokaku, Shikaku.
And then
the little
Zuiho.
One. Yeah. Zuiho, yeah. That seems to be balanced a little bit in favor of the Japanese.
Jap Edge.
Uh-huh.
And finally, I don't know, it's really the only...
Those are...
The carrier battles that
right.
were, like,
Solomon's is like kind of weird because it's a bunch of battles kind of rolled into one.
Yeah. And then once you get much past that, you
know, then the Americans can build ships and the Japanese can't, so we win.
Everything else.
Leyte Gulf. The Great Marianas Turkey Shoot. Does that make it clear who has the edge?
Everything else equals Leyte Gulf. And on that bombshell.
Yeah, right? That's it. So, you know, but that's the kind of thing that might be fun to play with, you know, late war carriers a bit.
So I don't know when this is going to be a thing, dear listeners, but it does look like a system that has some promise.
Yeah. I think
that,
I mean, we certainly didn't get bogged down with incremental inconsequential increments and getting preoccupied with those. We didn't get bogged down with too many characteristics, and we didn't get bogged down with things we couldn't represent.
Exactly.
I think there's no carrier that's relevant to the war that we can't represent. We might have problems with, like, Langley or some useless crap like that.
Well, I mean...
Small, crappy.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, those come down as like as much as anything else to the quality of the aircraft they embarked. Which old, poor.
Yeah.
Even if they weren't poor at their time of introduction, I mean, there's only like there's a limit to what you can do with World War II.
So swordfish, are we calling swordfish, we said are good old? Or standard old?
I think standard old, probably.
Standard old is probably fair.
There's... the old thing only can only like currently represent so much. Once you get to like a sufficiently bad aircraft, you've got to start like bumping it down from good, even if it was good back in its day.
Yeah, and I mean it's kind of hard to like what's a good torpedo. Nobody knew what a torpedo bomber was to do in the 1920s.
Yeah, well, besides drop torpedoes.
Well, yeah, but what characteristics? No. Because in the 1920s,
we'll build it slow so it can drop torpedoes better.
Well, in the 1920s, nobody actually believed that an aircraft could pose a threat to their stupid freaking battleships. Go away, Billy Mitchell. I can't hear you.
Yeah. All right. So I think you've done it again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to the Crossbox podcast.
How could you?
This was like a particularly dull one. We spent an hour babbling about this stuff.
Right? You know, God, you know, you're lucky we didn't go to damage control procedures.
We've got like 9 minutes. We still could.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk that. So what's really, is there anything more important than flooding the fuel lines with inert gas prior to combat? I'm going to say no.
Maybe not, like, leaving all your munitions lying around the flight deck, but...
Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. That just seems like... Maybe get off the short bus, go to kindergarten, maybe pass kindergarten.
I mean, well, I think the more than that is the like the better isolated firefighting systems.
Right.
The Japanese had the fire mains on their ships had there were two systems. There was a port system and a starboard system.
Yeah.
Whereas the Americans were like there was a very sectionalized system.
Exactly. So which is good because it's harder to break it.
Yeah. If you break. Say if you like one lucky hit breaks two pipes on a, like a hit on a Japanese carrier, then suddenly you have no pumps.
Wait a minute, did that happen?
Several times, actually.
Yeah,
off on the same day.
Yeah, wait a minute, huh? Gee, was that the 4th of June?
No, that was the one.
1942. Yeah, I think it was.
Whereas the Americans, with their properly isolated, like compartmentalized firefighting systems, never actually had a case where all of the pumps went out, I don't think.
No, yeah. They never did. And whenever, like, really, in the American case, you had the Lexington was the big loss to a gasoline problem, you know, vapors, which, again, they rectified with inert gas. And after that, all of the other losses were, you know, the kind of battering you'd expect.
Yeah.
You know, Yorktown, too many torpedoes.
Can't do too much about that. Yeah.
Hornet was just stupid. I guess somebody didn't get the memo that the ship was okay, that she was salvageable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for, like, noteworthy carrier losses.
Yep. Well, there you have it.
Yeah, cool.
That was actually much shorter than I expected, although we didn't go into all the excruciating detail. For that, I would recommend Shattered Sword.
Exactly.
Which does go into all the excruciating detail, and it's great.
Yeah, but let's be fair here. Shattered Sword does it in a way that's very readable and approachable to non-midshipman listener.
It's a very narratively satisfying description of damage control procedures in excruciating detail.
Right. I mean, let's put it this way. If you are a naval buff like us and, you know, your blood runs cold with, you know, bunker fuel and seawater, you'll love the book.
Right.
If you like history and good yarns, you'll still love the book. And it's really hard to find a book that can check both those boxes.
Exactly, yeah. I always recommend Ian Toll for that sort of thing, because he's unabashedly a narrative history writer.
Yes.
Whereas I suppose other historians find that to be like gauche or perhaps postmodern, which I think probably the worst thing you could call a historian.
Yeah, I know, right? At that point, you jump in front of a bus, you failed.
Yeah. So yeah, well, like we said, you've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to us babble about a game that may or may not ever see the light of day.
Right.
The Crossbox podcast is produced by my co-host John and me, Jay, and is brought to you by Many Words Press, online at manywords.press. Our theme music is Royal Rumble by J-Man of rmusicbox.com and is used under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution License. Thanks again, J-Man. Keep up with us, the Crossbox contributors, between podcasts at soapbox.manywords.press.